Stepped out of my zone. I had to get out of the lung and figure it out on my own. And I know what I really want now. Can't stop me, can't break me. But don't kill me, gon' make me. Shoot for the stars, don't save me. And now I see clear in HD.
Gotta go hard. Gotta go hard. I ain't got time to waste.
I ain't got time.
I gotta go high.
Hello and welcome to the Storm of Season 2. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and my European city I would go to spot Spider-Man in is, of course, Amsterdam, because you could see a lot of things in Amsterdam.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and the European city I would go to spot Spider-Man in fucking Bruges, I think, probably.
And I'm Neil Miller, and if I were to go to a European city to spot Spider-Man, I would actually go to a rural commune in Sweden so that Spider-Man and I could take drugs and go to a midsummer festival and maybe get killed in a horrific way. But also, Spider-Man, I feel like, would come in handy in that situation.
Maybe. Yeah. Peter Parker's so anxious. Like, Tom Holland's Peter Parker is so anxious. Can you imagine him, like, tripping? That seems like he would have a...
No, we need to give him some downers.
Yeah.
We are here to talk about Spider-Man Far From Home, which is in theaters this week. If you have seen the movie, you could listen to all this podcast, because we are dividing it into calm and storm sections. The calm, where we will not be spoiling the plot of the movie. We will be giving you some general feelings of, like, the first act and what we thought of it, but we're not going to be, like, spoiling plot details. That wouldn't be any fun, unless that's what you like, in which case, after some sort of noise or music track, we will enter what we call the storm, where we'll have all the spoilers, and that's meant for after you've seen the movie. You could even hit pause during the noise or music track. Perfectly acceptable way to do it. Let's jump right into this very special episode, because you're also hearing from us this week on the Storm of Lost Rewatch podcast, so no need to belabor reviews or any sort of found signals, because we've collected your questions for both the Calm and the Storm to add to our discussion. Guys, Spider-Man Far From Home, the second solo Spider-Man movie co-produced by Sony and Marvel, or in this case, Pascal Pictures, long story, but takes Peter on a European vacation after the events of Avengers Endgame. Neil, how did you think Spider-Man works as sort of like a after dinner mint to the meal that was Avengers Endgame?
I liked most of it. I was very confused by how they explain why the kids haven't aged, or like what happened in the snap.
A little bit. Good job with it. Anyway,
I thought it was in the end, it doesn't matter, I think, or didn't matter that much. It gives Spider-Man an opportunity to brood a little bit, and it's interesting because he's brooding over the fact that Tony Stark is not around anymore. Spoilers for Endgame. And it's I think an interesting twist, because it doesn't seem like they're going to do any Uncle Ben stuff with these movies. Well, they haven't yet, and it's not over like a girl. He's not brooding over a girl thing, and so I think that's good. Well, sort of. But I think I think they clean it up a little, just a little bit, and it's fine.
So as Joanna was like alluding to, it worked for you, the post Endgame wrap up to quickly get us back into Spider World.
Yeah, I guess I don't need to spoil the way they do it, but they do it sort of similarly. I will say similarly to Homecoming. Homecoming has a funny bit at the front where it's like basically previously on this Spider-Man's adventures, right? Via the phone footage stuff, right?
And it shows on the tarmac, the Civil War events.
Yeah, exactly. And so this is a similar thing where it like couches a lot of exposition in something quite funny. And so it just sort of like moves it along at a clip. And there is a kid in the cast. You know, you have you're like five, doing that math correctly? Yeah, five of the teens from the first movie are back, and they were all snapped, and we've seen them in the trailer, so that's not a spoiler. So five of the kids on this trip were snapped. They were gone for 5 years and are back, having to, like, you know, do high school 5 years later. But there is one kid in the cast who wasn't, and so that is a useful tool for, like, this kid lived through those 5 years. I do wish that they had some occasional throwaway jokes of, like, I'm sorry, what happened while we were gone? You know, similar to sort of, like, a mini version of Winter Soldier and Steve Rogers being like, I miss so much. Internet, so helpful, or whatever. So, yeah, it would have been fun if maybe they had had, like, maybe they have to, you have to take, like, a past 5 years history course or whatever if you've been snapped, something like that. I don't know. But no, I thought they did a good job with that. And then I thought the way that they used Tony Stark in this, where there's a line that Tom Holland has, like, sort of a more emotional line when he says, like, I see his face everywhere, but you literally do see Iron Man everywhere in, like, street art all around Europe. And so he's just, like, there without being there. And that's, I don't know, it's pretty great. I thought they did a good job explaining that and making this feel like a continuation while still somehow keeping the tone light.
Yeah. They also have Aunt May, who's working for a charity for people who were displaced, because some people, you know, if you come back exactly where you were left off, like, other people might have moved into your apartment. So that really early on, that's sort of like a fun twist that they use to deal with it. But once we get out on vacation, we're back to normal Spider-Man antics, at least as far as Tom Holland Spider-Man goes, because he's on a class trip with Ned, and Ned wants to be bachelors in Europe, and Peter has a plan to get closer to MJ, but runs into some of that old Parker luck. Joanna, I think you were saying earlier that you like what this movie does with Mary Jane and who's now full MJ and Peter's relationship.
Yeah, no, I love it. Like, Zendaya's take on MJ in the first movie was so fun, to the point where, like, you know, like, you don't know she's Mary Jane because she's not the object of his affection in the first movie. And she's just sort of, like, on the fringes, kind of, like, glowering and quipping, and it's fun. And then the big reveal at the end is like, whoa, she's the Mary Jane. Oh my God. But she's not white. What the fuck? and then in this, yeah, it starts with, like, I don't remember how, I'm going to have to rewatch Homecoming, but I don't remember how Homecoming ends, but I don't think it ends with Peter being like, Peter's like intrigued by MJ, but I don't think he's like, MJ's the one, but somewhere along the way, he has decided that, like, she's the one. So, like, the film opens with him, like, on a mission to romance her. And so, like,
it's almost like getting snapped out of existence. Gave him a sense of urgency.
Put some things in perspective. Anyway, and she's just great. Like, she's still her, like, glowering, slightly awkward self. They're both so awkward, but not in a way that, like, I don't want to watch, in a way that I'm just like, come on, you puppies, you can do it. And I love her in this. And she's, like, so smart and capable, but without it being like, it's just so in your face girl power, like some of the moments in Endgame that I didn't, like, really appreciate. It's just sort of like, MJ is just so, like, capable and cool without being like, and then she took out 20 bad guys all by herself, because, like, that's not who MJ is necessarily. And I really, really was into it. And Zendaya, like, is just so great in literally everything I've ever seen her do. So having caveat, never seen her Disney work, but ever since, great, great stuff. Even Circus Musical, she's great in it. So there you go.
We also have some classic road trip comedy. Neil, what did you think of the high school European part of Spider-Man Homecoming, Far From Home? Jesus. Remember which movie we're talking about.
It's one of those. It's in the Spider-Man oeuvre.
It is.
I really liked it. I love Ned. What's his name? Jacob?
Batalon,
yeah. Mm-hmm. He's great. Very funny. They brought some of the other kids sort of into it, which I thought was clever. But really the secret sauce here is the addition of J.B. Smoove.
Yeah.
As the second teacher/chaperone. Because he doesn't you know, like Martin Starr is still the teacher, and that's fine. He's the sort of, I don't know, he's not really like a nitwit teacher, but he's kind of like the silly one. But then J.B. Smoove just comes in every once in a while and is like, I'm here to remind you why I'm in this movie. Just for like 10 seconds. And it works perfectly.
Really high billing, too. I don't know if you noticed that in the closing credits. It's like, you know, Tom Holland, you know.
Zendaya, John Favreau.
You know, J.B. Smoove. And I was like, what? Okay. Yeah. All right, bud.
He was an important chaperone for the European trip.
Yeah, but Justice for Martin Starr, this is his second film, and he just got out-smoofed, you know.
It's true. I did like how there were, there's just moments in the movie where, like, the audience needs to say something. Like, hey, this science field trip doesn't feel like it's very sciencey.
Yes.
And he's there for us.
And then, of course, one of the things I liked about Spider-Man Far From Home is because it has all these, like, little plots going on that it does manage to weave together, but I think also because of the road trip aspect of it, it feels like a arc that could be over like 5 or 6 issues of a comic book. So there are all these little like self-contained bursts of fun, and then of course distracting Peter from this fun, another superhero shows up on the scene to fight a water monster. And he wears a bowl on his head, and he is Jake Gyllenhaal Mysterio, who is was a superhero in his Earth that was destroyed by the elementals that are now attacking our Earth. And so he and Nick Fury want Spider-Man to help him out. And that's where we get to talk about Jake Gyllenhaal in this movie, who finds like a very charismatic way to enter the movie as a hero into like a Marvel Cinematic Universe that has some very charismatic humor heroes for a movie that starts, I believe, with the image of Robert Downey Jr., or at least after some titles. Jake Gyllenhaal sort of brings that.
He comes
little
along
swagger.
And he's like, hey,
no.
Yeah. Would you like a younger, handsomer version of Robert Downey Jr.?
I guess not that level of swagger. He brings that level of confidence, but more control where Robert Downey Jr.
I believe the word you're looking for is zaddy. I think that's the word that the kids are using.
I don't know what that means, and I don't want to know.
Like, Jeff Goldblum's a zaddy. I'll tell you that much right now. I know exactly how this movie started because I had to watch it start twice because our screening was a complete fucking shit show. It fades from the like Columbia statue to like this worn out statue somewhere in Mexico, and then you get this encounter in Mexico, and Jake Gyllenhaal shows up there, and then you get Tony Stark.
Photo of Tony Stark.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I like Jake Gyllenhaal in this movie. I think he figures out a way to do I don't think he has as much meaty material to dig into is Michael Keaton, because Michael Keaton in Homecoming had the familial angle, but in this one, by the time we meet Mysterio, his family's dead, so it's not like we get a whole bunch of touching scenes about that. But when Peter does need another hero to lean on, Nick Fury is not going to be that person, and with Iron Man gone, it feels like Peter needs to step up. Which is, I feel like, something I said I would like them to do with Spider-Man in the Marvel Cinematic Universe a while ago. So I'm certainly pleased by the turn of events
It's a big question in this movie, and it's not a spoiler to say this, that like this movie is very preoccupied with the in-universe version of the meta question of like, who are our heroes now that so many of our big Marvel Cinematic Universe heroes have died. You know what I mean? Like, so can Tom Holland carry the MCU on his shoulders? Like, there are questions, you know, and the questions that I always have anytime, like, a hero has a standalone film and you're like, where are the rest of the Avengers? They do ask, you know, they're like, where's Thor? They have like questions for that. So like, or answers for that. So there's like a reason why it's Jake Gyllenhaal and Tom Holland trying to save Europe from elementals and not like all of the Avengers, as it should be when something like this happens. I'm not sure the answer is like completely satisfactory, but it is like a question they need to answer now that there are so many heroes populating the Earth in theory. But yeah, this question of like who will take up the mantle of Iron Man, or do you need another Iron Man? Like, what do you need to go forward in this franchise? So,
yes, I like the meta angle, and I think the movie gets more meta as it goes on. But we will save that for the storm, and instead pivot to your questions. Here is one from Ryan. Which Marvel Cinematic Universe movies should folks see before Far From Home? And
I have ideas.
yeah, go Neil.
You should definitely watch Endgame, yeah. Homecoming would be a good one. Just to get yourself back in the Tom Holland mood. And Iron Man 1. Because there are... Ooh. I mean... It's crazy to me that they still keep weaving the DNA of movies that like were 23 movies ago into the new stuff. But yeah, it's worth going back to Iron Man 1.
Remember how Endgame ends with the sound of the banging hammer on Tony Stark's armor, and you're like, "That's it, they've put Iron Man to bed." And then this movie's like, "What if not though?"
what if instead of being a character, he's an idea that looms over everyone?
I would also add Captain Marvel to the list. So, you should see all the ones that came out this year, I think, and it's only two of them, right? So,
well, three.
Well, yeah,
three.
One of the
damn
three now, and then yeah, one of them was 3 hours long, but it's been
one of them was six movies by itself.
Yeah.
Wait, what am I missing? Marvel Endgame.
Oh, and this one.
Okay.
Yeah.
For some reason, I was like worried for a second I had forgotten an Ant-Man, but that was last year. I tend to forget Ant-Mans.
oh, poor Ant-Man.
Was there an Ant-Man 3? I think there was.
Ant-Man and the Hornet, right? Anyway, no, see, you should
It was
Captain
just
Marvel.
Called The Wasp.
No, the Wasps, right?
Wasps.
Wasps, a mother-daughter jaunt. Anyway, no, you should see Captain Marvel in Endgame, I think, and Homecoming, yeah.
Excellent. This one's from Dan. What's the farthest from home you have been? Let's go with Neil first.
Well, I'm a continental North America only person so far in my life. So I guess the Mexico border in California, there was like a beach that was like south of San Diego that I went to one time. So from Ohio, that's probably the furthest. So there you go.
Nice. Joanna?
I had to look at the map to make sure I was right. It is Salzburg, Austria. It's the farthest from home I've been. Just slightly edges out Venice. So Italy is complicated.
Hey, you're a real Peter Parker.
I mean, I did do this, like, when I was in college, I went and studied in Florence. And then my sister came and joined me, and then we like traveled around Europe for, I don't know, I want to say like 2 weeks, and like I was flat fucking broke. So it was deeply unglamorous. It was like the Venice stop of this movie, which is like deeply unglamorous. J.B. Smoove's line, sorry to spoil it for people who haven't seen the movie yet, but like J.B. Smoove's line of like, when in Venice, your socks get wet. I don't know. There's something about his delivery that killed me, slayed me personally. So we did like Italy and Austria and Switzerland, and my experience in one of the countries is very similar to Peter's, and I'll talk about that in the storm.
Interesting.
Yeah. But yeah. This
Which one of the elementals did you have to fight off?
Heart.
Ooh, the toughest of the elementals.
Dave, what's the farthest from home you've been?
Mine's probably somewhere in Italy. Maybe Perugia. I don't know how far over that is. Or Rio. I don't know. On globes, those are both far from home.
Rio somehow feels farther.
It did feel farther, that's for sure. And I was older, so I drank more. I don't know. Rio's fun.
So you were physically and spiritually further away.
Yeah, I was physically and spiritually further away.
Perugia's like mid Italy. You weren't like in the heel or the toe, the boot or anything like that. You were like mid shaft.
Right, right. I don't think I've been to southern Italy that I recall. I've been I've dipped down into Italy. But yeah, mine was also one trip when I was in eighth grade with like a summer learning tour thing that probably cost a whole bunch of money I owe my parents. And I studied abroad in 2006 for a semester in London that involved lots of travel. And then the Rio thing was I went down there with a group to do charity work for a week. And we got the nights off on the beach. It was fun. Yeah. That's the furthest I've been from home. Let's answer another question. Matt Farley asks, how well does it accomplish, it being Spider-Man Far From Home, the topic of this podcast, not where we're going to travel, being both an end to the first era of the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the start of the next, and does it feel more like a beginning or an end? This is a calm question.
I think some of the fringy stuff might feel like it's launching things in certain directions, but Spider-Man by design, because it's a co-pro with Sony, always feels like a sidequel to me. You know what I mean? It always feels like, meanwhile, Peter Parker's still in high school, you know? So like, it doesn't really feel like it's pushing things forward in a huge way, other than some of the sort of, maybe end of credit stuff that we can talk about in the storm. But do you know what I mean? Like, but at its heart, other than like an emotional moving on from Tony Stark sort of narrative, that would be my answer.
Yeah. I guess I think I was just going to say, I feel like it's more of a closure thing. Like it feels like it's like, it doesn't present any new big ideas for the MCU going forward. Unless Dave's about to tell me that I'm wrong about that in the storm, then I retract that immediately. But to my mind, this didn't feel like it was starting anything. It felt like it was finishing, which I think was kind of what it was supposed to be, right? Supposed to, don't they think of this as like the end of the phase?
Right. This is the technically the end of the Infinity Saga.
Yeah. So that I don't know if this feels like the right end for the saga, but it definitely feels more like an end than a beginning.
It has a lot of fallout from the realities of Endgame, the time that everybody was gone, the fact that the entire world is now aware, as aware as Joanna was alluding to, of the Marvel heroes as we are. You know, they teach Thor physics in school, which is weird because it used to be magic, but whatever.
People are worried that the aliens are back, right?
Yeah, so the aliens are going to come back.
Yeah.
So it does well in the sense that a lot of like the questions of what's the world going to be like after Endgame? Like, are we going to be stuck in the future? And the answers are like, yes, but it doesn't feel weird because the Marvel universe has been able to like separate itself from the real world entirely at this point. And then after it spends like 20 minutes sort of mopping that up with fun little comedy scenes, it becomes, I think, a really good Spider-Man movie, but it's a really good middle Spider-Man movie. It has him asking a lot of the questions. The middle movies have a mask, and then I think by the end of the movie, you definitely have an idea of where the next Spider-Man movie could go, but doesn't necessarily have to go, so it sort of reopens that world up. But I don't think it's like pointing a direction for Phase 4, so I think it does work better as like a, I think it'd be weird if our last thing, I referred to it as like a mint before, but it would be weird to forget that the Marvel Cinematic Universe could be joyous just because this huge sacrifice had to end this dramatic story at the end. But like, we've come back, there have been some major consequences, but it's still fun enough to be a pretty good Spider-Man movie. Cool.
Sequel.
I like the mint analogy. Like after a steak that's very hearty and like heavy, you just get a little mint, you know, and it's better.
It's nice that the MCU can modulate itself in this way where it's like, we can dish you up. And this is like Kevin Feige's dream, right? Is we can dish you up teen comedies right alongside huge, crazy 3-hour crossover sagas. Like we can do both. And
we exist in all genres.
We are movies.
And then the Marvel will seep
all
into that
the movies
genre
that you like. are Marvel movies.
That was the question of like, oh my God, with the stakes being raised so high and Endgame and all the world and blah, blah, how are you going to keep them down on the farm? And it's like, bring in Tom Holland. He'll just be so cute. You won't
do awkward kid stuff. And honestly, you mentioned this, but I think the awkward kid stuff or teenager stuff, sorry, is some of the best stuff. They really lean into it in a way that I think, shows that they are interested in the you know, these characters, and it helps us continue to root for them to not die.
Yes, definitely. I was more interested. I'm way into the lore of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and I very much like Spider-Man, but the Spider-Man that Marvel has chosen to adapt in these Sony spin-off films use a lot of names and ideas and references to old Spider-Man storylines, but they're not one-to-one adapting. You know, like Ned Leeds was never Spider-Man's friend to the degree that Ned in this movie was. Mary Jane, you know, hasn't been portrayed this way in the comics. Betty Brant was initially a love interest for Peter, and here they don't seem to be like that interested in each other. So
shout out Angouri Rice, though, doing great stuff. Really good.
Aunt May is like this old caring aunt in basically all iterations, and here she's more like a peer adult that, you know, is fun and never has to scold and allows us to always be on
and
her side.
Is Marissa Tomei, which and I think is always Marissa a plus Tomei. If you are Marissa Tomei.
Yeah.
So they've really, with a little help from Marvel, they've established like the rules of this new Spider-Man universe, and I think it really delivers on the promise that Homecoming did, you know, with the same thing with having Liz Allen thrown in the way she was. I guess I don't have to spoil Homecoming completely here in the calm. Guys, before we transition into Storm and Storm questions, there's a question that I've been asked to answer in 15 minutes or less.
I'm going to shave it down. What do you think, Neil? One minute? 2 minutes.
2 minutes feels like a good... I was thinking three in my mind,
let's do two
feels like the right balance.
Okay, on your marks, Dave?
Wait, what's the question first?
So the question is, what is your favorite Spidey suit ever and why? And it's a large question.
Two minutes, go.
All right. Well, I initially want to go with the Scarlet Spider Ben Reilly suit because he goes to like an exhibit on spiders in the museum and takes a hoodie and rips the like sleeves off and then just puts on a red leotard with like ankle pockets, and then he keeps his impact webbing, which is a different kind of webbing he's made up on his belt, which, you know, some versions of Spider-Man do, but not all Spider-Man. It seems kind of cool, but it's really 90s, and I don't know if that's just a style-based reason. But I guess it's favorite and not best, so my answer can't be proven incorrect.
Wow, that was way under time. Good job, buddy.
Oh, cool, then I can answer.
I can talk about it later. Yeah, okay, go. Just go ahead. Yeah,
go.
I love Spider-Gwen's suit because she has a hood, and sometimes that comes in handy when it's raining.
Yeah, and in
mine has a hood. Did you not hear? It's a hoodie.
I know.
Ripped off the sleeves. All right, cool.
Those ballet slippers. Those are awesome.
Two hoods.
She looks the most comfortable.
Then there's also the Sonic suit that obviously
can make him
invisible and invulnerable to Sonic attacks. It also looks really cool. It looks like a Tron suit.
We finished. last question in the calm from our friend Manu. Was the term fishbowl used enough? My follow-up question is, like, was it used at all? I don't think
it was. Yeah, I don't remember it.
Maybe once?
Yeah, they did not work that for as much humor as they should have, is what we're saying.
Tony Stark isn't here anymore.
Right.
So there's no one who, like, makes fun of how you look when you show up.
You're right. So, oh, man.
Yeah. We'll figure out something.
They need a new... I don't think Tom Holland is mean enough to pull it off, but they need a new person who makes fun of other costumes.
I did like that Aunt May was like, was that Doctor Strange? Except she didn't call him Doctor Strange. She was like, Mr. Strange, like the mysterious. And he's like, no, because they both have capes. It's an easy mistake to make, Aunt May. I feel you.
They do. And they both just shoot like weird...
geometric patterns.
Light geometric patterns, yeah.
It's true.
That's the things.
All right. So
that means that off that talk about Mysterio and that question, we are going to head into the storm. Jump off now if you don't want to be spoiled and haven't seen the movie yet.
Spider-pew.
Would you say that we're about to swing into the storm?
Swing into the storm.
Spider-pew does.
All right. Pew, pew. No, it's thwip, thwip, thwip. Oh, that's weird. It's hard to say. I don't like it.
Bang.
Who in here trying to start a fire? All right, back for the storm. So, where should we begin? I'm going to throw it off to Neil. Neil, you saw this with Theo, right?
We did. Together.
How'd you guys like this? How'd you guys like this movie, given the, you know, mid, it takes a twist about midway through and I think switches tones, but in a good way. I wanted to allude to, how it sort of takes on a, you can't always believe what you see thing. And the question I want to
ask. It takes a real stance on fake news, that's for sure.
It does.
Deep fakes.
The question I want to ask you, and maybe you clean some off Theo's Spider-Man fan, is where do you think all of the fight scenes had that in mind? Because I don't think we get some super dynamic action from the Elementals in this movie.
Maybe. I do feel like they. It comes as like a weird, I don't know, maybe it's because I didn't know this was coming or what, but when they reveal not only Mysterio's sort of ideas and his motives, but also the fact that he's using drones and Tony Stark's, projector thingies to create these realities, it made me think like there's something like too real about it almost, because those first couple fights before we realize this are maybe they oversold it a little bit, but it's like, you're telling me that was totally fake. That's right. Crazy.
Well, not totally.
You're telling me you have drones that shoot water.
Yeah. Then again,
we see the drones on the water because it takes place like near the water. Right.
So right, but like, and then we see the drones later. Guy, like punches Peter, maskless Peter. And it's like a water stream that like hits.
Yeah, but like he's right on a bridge over water when it happens.
No,
so,
I guess
like,
you're right.
There could be drones under that in that river right there. Just
I,
sort of
I guess I'm pretty sure we're hold up because
question.
Yes, please do.
My hologram question is not a battle. It's the scene where I was willing to accept a lot of it, but there's a scene where Peter's sitting on perched on the edge of the railing somewhere, and Mysterio floats up to talk to him, and then he sits down next to him to talk to him. So that's entirely hologram, is what we're saying.
Or it's his suit, because he doesn't have a physical version of the suit.
But he can't fly.
He can't fly. So he like flies up, and then he sits down and takes the mask off and talks to him. And so you see him like have a hologram version of the suit over him when he's like rehearsing and stuff like that. I like the rehearsal scene. I thought it was really good. But like that's a question I have. I guess that part has to be hologram. He has to be in a warehouse somewhere, like just acting his little Gyllenhaal tush off to comfort Peter there, you know?
Yeah, that one was one that I kept coming back to, was the moments where we see him interact, like take the fishbowl off but stay in a suit and interact.
He would have to bet that Peter was not going to reach out to touch him when he sits right next to him if he's entirely a hologram. So
it doesn't bother me that a lot of Stark scientists might have come up with a way to make him fly when he needs to in very like controlled situations.
Are you ready for my great Spider-Man villain point?
Yes. Don't forget you're a genius. Let's do it.
I had this thought in the shower. All my best thoughts are shower thoughts. Isn't it interesting that in this Spider-Man universe, which is so interested in bringing things like down to earth and small scale and high school and stuff like that, that both of our villains are not super powered villains. And I think that's like, I mean, that is like a theme, and correct me if I'm wrong, of Spider-Man, is that like often these things are like science, and it's a science enhanced villain is what we usually get in a Spider-Man story. But like, one would say that like Doc Ock was no longer, or, you know, Dr. Connors certainly, like Doc Ock is no longer like really human. Whereas like, what's Jake Gyllenhaal's name?
Mysterio.
Quentin Beck.
No, Quentin Beck. Quentin Beck and Michael Keaton's character, those are human guys who like put on a thing to become the villain.
I don't know. I mean, the Lizard would be a good example of like somebody who's not. Doc Ock is still human. He's just got a cool backpack.
That's not a backpack. Well, at least in the Alfred Molina version, that's not a backpack he can ever take off.
Well, that's true. That's true. I do. It is interesting not only that they made them human, but also that they tied them both to Tony Stark. Mm. Like, both of them are sort of like Adrian, what's his name?
Keaton.
Keaton's character. Tombs. Adrian Tombs.
Yeah,
I knew I was going to get it. So he is, you know, pushed aside. He's the scrap guy who's pushed aside by Tony Stark after the Battle of New York. And then Quentin Beck is somebody who was fired by Tony Stark. So I think that's also really interesting that they chose to make Tony Stark both the mentor to this version of Spider-Man and the creator of all his villains so far.
Yeah, that's fun.
I love that the first movie after Iron Man sacrificed himself and dies, everybody basically also reiterates that he's got like the whole world under drone surveillance and he gives it over to his kid. Like the whole the slow transition of Iron Man to guy who made weapons to protect America to superhero that made weapons to protect the Earth, but just pointed a huge gun at the Earth, is, I think, realistically satisfying to me. And I think it's very smart of these movies to, like, to keep things at the friendly neighborhood level, because it's ultimately, like, a blue-collar, someone who feels like they're smart and better got shrifted by Tony Stark.
Yeah.
And if they had his technology, by gum, they'd be completely different.
Well, this is, and you mentioned Theo earlier. This is the thing that Theo said while we were on our way home, was both of the Spider-Man villains so far, they kind of have a point. You know, like we're not going to follow them all the way down there to where they're going, but, you know, you could kind of see it. You're kind of rooting for them a little bit, maybe a little bit. I don't know.
I mean, I think even after the bar speech in this movie, I'm still mostly on Mysterio's side. It's not until, you know, he points the drones at his, you know, employees' heads that I'm completely there it is.
You know where he lost me?
Go where?
When he called Edith honey. My whole audience is like, ooh, don't. Edith is
good
great.
Good virtue signaling, Jake Gyllenhaal.
Edith is great. That's a great concept. Even Dead I'm the Hero is great. My question, though, is what happened to Jennifer Connelly as the voice of Peter Parker's suit? I really liked her. And she's gone.
Well, he didn't bring that suit.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, I liked her as
I hope they
Jarvis.
Bring that back.
Yeah.
Or, like, maybe she and Edith can, like, get along and, like, take
because,
turns.
Because, like, Paul Bettany's out of the frame. I mean, he's got a Disney Plus show, but, like, the Bettany Connolly household needs to eat. So, you know.
We're the only ones watching Labyrinth once a year.
And A Knight's Tale.
And A Knight's Tale.
Oh.
I think I wouldn't count any of those. So here's something else that we've learned about the Marvel Cinematic Universe Spider-Man. New suits every time. Even if you don't need it. Even if you have just all the suits in one movie, you still have to put some new suits on.
I hated that one that he was wearing at the fundraiser. I hated it so much.
Iron Spider.
Oh, that's the Iron Spider, yeah.
I hated the Iron Spider.
It's not great when he's not moving.
Yeah, because it just has, like, it has really built shoulders, and it just looks very awkward. I hated it, but I liked his other suits. And Aunt May.
Yeah, I like the latter black one. The black and red one. It's my favorite. It's been interesting they've been showing the the fanning, gliding part when, and not the parachute, the spider-shaped parachute, which I thought, which is an excellent feature to add.
Spider-shute. I will say this, about spoilers for this movie. I knew via Dave, via Patches, that, Nick Fury and Maria Hill were Skrulls. Did you know that, Neil, going in?
I had no idea.
So I knew that going in. So then I was watching their performances. Samuel Jackson did nothing to like really to modulate his Nick Fury thing. Kobe Smulders, however, is like, you know what? Okay. All right. This will be
fun. Here we go.
I'll make her different. And she did. I was like, I see what you're doing, Kobe. You're like, Maria Hill's kind of a thankless role in this franchise in general, so I will treat this as an acting exercise. How could Maria Hill be subtly different because she's actually a Skrull? Anyway, I just want to shout out Kobe Smulders. Because, yeah, listen, her husband's been fired from SNL, so you got to think of the Smulders household as well.
Man, so many households.
Why am I supporting so many households with my spider dollars?
Spider-Yen. All right, sorry, what?
Yes, and then, so after, one of my favorite things about the movie that I can't talk about with, in the non-spoiler section is once Mysterio goes full Mysterio, Mysterio attacks Spider-Man by luring him with fake Nick Fury and fake Maria Hill, leading to one of my favorite Spider-Man fight sequences. I guess non-animated is a tough line to draw with that particular fight sequence.
I would not.
Because it's like super dreamy. Like he's falling through comic book panels and we're rotating and things are popping up. And it really worked for me because in a world, once again, where you grow up, not in a world where you will never see a Spider-Man movie on the screen for your whole life, you have to just picture what Mysterio fights look like, and mine were lamer than what I saw in Spider-Man Far From Home. So, like, the whole idea, I'm glad that Manu asked if Fishbowl was used enough, because that would have, like, made it Mysterio perfect. But even though I like Jake Gyllenhaal a lot as this, like, hero turned, like, villain who's just, like, a smart guy, and then he gets, like, sort of theatric, and then, like, the Mysterio I recognize shows up. And I'm like, oh yeah, good. They figured out like what the core of the thing was and got rid of like the stupid theater actor with a vengeance thing and replaced it with Jake Gyllenhaal. So one of my favorite versions of Mysterio, ever.
I liked that.
It's definitely the best cinematic version.
I liked that fight, and I liked the Tower Bridge fight for the most part. I especially like the part where Peter has to like, you know, figure out what's real and not in that final sort of hallway confrontation. I think we have one too many elemental fights. That's what I think. I think there are too many other fights leading up to those two fights. I don't know. I just got kind of tired of watching Peter.
But they flew them all the way to
Prague.
This felt like, honestly, I spent way too much time with that chef show on Netflix. So like now my conspiracy theory is that Jon Favreau convinced them to do this as like a road trip movie so that he could go to Europe and hang out.
But that's why, I mean, honestly, so you know, this is giving us like Euro trip vibes, right? Like it's riffing on that whole like genre. But I feel like that's why TV shows used to do this, where their production, the team is just like, we kind of want to go to Hawaii.
We're doing Saved by the Bell season.
Saved by the Bell Hawaii trip. Yeah. All right. Cool. We just want to go to Hawaii. It's fine. You know, Growing Pains, I think, did a tour of, Europe, a couple episodes. I'm dating myself right now, but, you know, that was a thing. Like, let's go somewhere for a very special episode because we want to go to Venice or whatever.
Yeah, this episode of the Marvel Cinematic Universe television show is just set in Europe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think it only has to be to provide that, you know, ticking time bomb on the teenage stuff, which definitely does amp up on school trips, if I recall. Or at least, maybe not like with locals, but definitely the intertensions.
Well, yeah, because you're away from your parents.
Mm-hmm. You're like
together.
Far from home.
You're far.
The only people you have to outsmart are your two idiot teachers.
What's the name of the third installment? of Spider-Man. Home at last? Home no more? Oh, I thought I lost you guys.
No, I'm deep in thought. Because it is probably going to have home in it.
Homing device?
You can't go home?
You
can't do Spider-Man No More as your trilogy capper.
Spider-Man Home.
Spider-Home.
Did he say, don't you have any friendly neighborhood spider questions or something like that? Friendly neighborhood questions? Something like that.
Yeah.
That was really a funny moment. All right. Namas Dave asked us, what could the use of Mysterio portend for the inclusion of weirder, more comic booky characters in future movies? I think nothing, because it's a fake Mysterio.
Mysterio is full of shit. I was mildly disappointed in the lack of confirmation of the multiverse in this movie.
Yeah.
Me
I know
too.
That it's, they haven't closed that door all the way, but they really teased it out, and now I'm sad.
Well, I have a question. Do you think J. Jonah Jameson, being,
you mean MCU's Alex Jones,
being played, like importing him from another franchise, isn't that a little multiversey?
On a meta level, sure.
Like that, they've never done that, right?
I'm not sure how they're gonna. It's gonna play.
Well, except for the time that the Human Torch became Captain America.
Oh my god! All these websites are getting around not spoiling by saying by reporting that J.K. Simmons attended the premiere. It you little and it's like literally
totally normal
Hollywood. They're like, we're not spoiling it. We're just saying he's at the premiere. I don't know why. I mean, like, you might want to pay attention to the fact that J.K. Simmons is at the premiere. It's fine. It's fine.
Might want to, anyway, you know, stick around for the credits.
I'm just saying.
I don't know if my friend Julian is listening to this before he saw the movie, but we gave all the warnings. But I was, like, trying to be like, I'll tell you everything about this movie because there's Spider-Man stuff in it and we're big Spider-Man fans and we haven't since we're kids. But I'm not going to tell you about the mid-credits sequence because I think it has something really enjoyable in it and sets up, like, change in the status quo for Spider-Man. And he started asking me questions. I'm like, do you want me to answer? And I'm like, he's like, no. And then the next test, he's like, I hope it's J. Jonah Jameson. And I'm like, I really like Mysterio in this movie. And immediately changed the subject.
It's on the Wikipedia page. So there's that.
Ah, you sons of bitches.
It's on J.K. Simmons' IMDb. Anyway, my theater gasped. J.K. Simmons!
Yeah.
Oscar winner J.K. Simmons! Back for another taste of the Spider-Verse. Anyway, and I loved that because, like, I love, like, this idea of the deep... I mean, they laid it on a little thick when Jake Gyllenhaal, like, a couple times, like, people believe anything you tell them. Sneer, sneer. But, like, I, as a person who's, like, fundamentally, foundationally terrified of deepfake videos and stuff like that, like, the fact that they put this together and then they fed it... So this is, like, something of a new concept, right? This, like, faking footage thing is slightly new. And then to feed it into a classic Spider-Man storyline, which is J. Jonah Jameson taking things out of context in order to try to, like, frame Spider-Man, it's great. It's fantastic. Good job.
Yeah, and Unmasked Spider-Man.
And Unmasked Spider-Man. And which is interesting because isn't he the only MCU hero who was masked, right?
Well, he took off his mask and revealed his identity during Civil War, but the devil erased everybody's memory?
No, I just mean
in the MCU.
Oh, in the MCU. Yes, I think he is, like, one of the few masked heroes that's left over.
I think he's
the only one.
Right?
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yes. Yeah, and so another thing that I think is interesting about this Spider-Man movie and Homecoming is they both of them, they're narratives that take place with Peter Parker and his problems both end with in the middle of somebody saying fuck.
Oh.
Because Aunt May was saying it at the end of Homecoming right before we hit the credits. And here Peter Parker gets his what the fuck. So Spider-Man can't go home again. better end with a fuck, I'll tell you what.
Well, and also, it really is the Spider-Man is the kids, the teeny kid movie. Tweeny? Is it tween? Is that what they are? The demographic
sure.
for this?
Sure.
It's the most light and sort of widest, most accessible type of movie. And that's sort of always been a Spider-Man thing ever since the Raimi trilogy was like, the best of them are extremely accessible across different age groups. And, but they won't even let Sam Jackson say fuck in this movie. So, you know,
that's true.
Gotta keep it clean for the kids. They love Spider-Man.
All the fucks for the last two letters of the script, for sure. all right. We have a question from Braprock, who says, how well does this set up the next phase of the MCU? Do you have a sense of where they're headed from the movie itself? Neil, prognosticate for us.
Well, the Skrulls, those are the alien guys, they can mm-hmm. change. Yeah, okay. They show up at the end.
Okay, kid.
So that's about it. I mean, that's really the only thing I picked up. I mean, there are, as we talked about earlier, there are bigger questions that the whole Earth of the MCU, Earth, what is it, 616?
Yes.
Hey, I remembered that. That this Earth is going through, which is like, who's defending us now? What are the next big threats? Why did someone move into my apartment while I was gone for 5 years? It wasn't my fault. I was snapped away. Or as this movie calls it, blipped away.
I like the blip better than the snap. And I like the snap better than the decimation.
Well, it makes sense because other people wouldn't know about the snap part. They would just know that people disappeared and then came back 5 years later. Right. So the blip makes more sense, I guess.
And the PR team's like, call it the snap. It's more factually accurate. And people are like, no, blip, dog. We're all doing really well at speaking the language of the children to the children on this
oh,
podcast.
Oh, yeah. The youths just are definitely going to be all over this one.
Pat us all on the back.
Okay. Skrulls.
That was really the only thing.
Do you want to talk to us about S-word?
I want to ask, is that space station at the end, is that S.W.O.R.D.? So, we have Talos and his wife impersonating, Nick Fury and Maria Hill while Nick Fury's seemingly on vacation, but actually on some sort of large space base with, Skrull people. And when Talos is talking to Nick Fury at one point, he says, like, people are always asking where the Avengers are. Like, I don't know what the answer to that is. So, I think that what we saw was S.W.O.R.D., which is the space-facing version of S.H.I.E.L.D., which Nick Fury was head of for a while until Hydra fucked that up for everybody. And that this is the way of the Marvel Cinematic Universes to keep the powered individuals in space so that back on Earth we could have our Spider-Mans and our Kung Fu Shang-Chis and not have to always be asking, you know, why isn't this like a Thor or Captain Marvel level event? Why aren't they constantly running back to Earth for every guy who has 500 drones? I think space might be their way that their answer. More space movies.
I have a question about Ben Mendelsohn's character. Didn't yes. they leave?
Yeah, but that was decades ago.
They left in the 90s.
Shit, they did leave decades ago.
With Carol to go find a new homeworld, and now they're capable of whatever ships Nick Fury are on and have like some sort of uniform, and something's happening in space.
Oh, but so we may be seeing part of the results of future Captain Marvel movies.
Possibly. It depends when Captain Marvel movies are set, but that's definitely a possibility. Or the results of other movies. So now that we have the blip, like, the blip was around the entire universe. So if you need, like, a, you know, if you need a new disaster, I used to think that if they wanted to put Nova, the universe, he's one of the, you know, corps of police officers that are in the Guardians of the Galaxy series, that they would have had to do that when Thanos attacked it and stole the Power Stone. But now you could just be like, oh, he was, you know, pre-blipped and he had to like raise himself as a hero for 5 years. And like the universe has given itself a new shorthand, I think, for galactic tragedy, that is going to ripple out worldwide like it did here, which is cool, I think. So this movie manages to like be set in the future and have consequences and everything entirely lined up within the Marvel Cinematic Universe line. But like I was saying before, it does bring that problematic part of Tony Stark, weapons developer, to light. So I don't think, and it does have the, you know, fake news, deep fake sort of like thing on its mind. So I'm not sure that I mind so much if I could get fun Spider-Man that acknowledges those issues exist. I don't think we need to have Spider-Man be the character that throws himself into those issues directly. Too much?
Never enough. Never enough, my friend. Someone on Slack asked us where Mysterio ranks on the MCU villain list. I would put him like mid. Like, I have no objection to Jake's performance at all. Yep, that's true. Yeah, at all. But I would still put him like mid top rather than anywhere near the top, you know?
Yeah, I think he's definitely on the upper side of the top 50, but I don't. He isn't. There's not like huge villainy monologues that you're going to remember Jake Gyllenhaal doing. You're just going to remember being very pleased with him in this movie.
Yeah. Like the bar monologue is the closest he gets. And that's like fun and funny. You know what I mean? And he never gets to a place of like, you really feel his righteous anger because his righteous anger is like shitty and petty versus Michael Keaton when you're like, yeah.
you're going to shoot a kid in the back of your car.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. That's what I would say.
He's definitely got a better. Okay, so there's. I'm trying to think of like. I had to look up a list of who the villains were, but like he's definitely top half.
Yeah, I bet he's top third. You know.
Okay. Probably. He's definitely better than Aldrich Killian,
mm-hmm.
played by Guy Pearce in Iron Man 3.
Sure.
But maybe not better than Hela.
Yeah, I'm not gonna. I'm not gonna risk anger.
That would certainly be close, and their color scheme goes really well together.
IMDb has Michael Mando listed in this film, but he's not in this film, right?
Can't say.
Not that I recall.
Because he played, what is it? I think Scorpion, is that his name? In the end of Homecoming?
Right. But I don't think he's... There's definitely no Sinister Six or anything in this movie, so...
A nice fake.
That I know about.
Good job,
IMDb.
But I also like that, like, the hot... Okay, also, follow-up question. And I thought of this immediately because I knew that they were Skrulls. Do you think... Do you think Talos is like, you Skrull, make yourself look like a hot Swede. Teenage Boys loves hot Swedes. Go get him to do a thing in a back room somewhere. Do you know what I mean? Like, do you think she chose that that shape just to seduce the teen? That's very teen movie comedy. I want to talk about Brad Davis, played by Remy Hai, who plays like the rival for Mary Jane's affections, even though she's just like not really that into him. This is the kid who was not blipped away, so he grew up. But what I really like is that this is like my favorite trend in teen movies. He's not like a shitty alpha jock because, like, according to my mild research, Brad Davis, the character he plays, is like a footballer who dated MJ briefly in the comics when she and Peter Parker broke up. But he's just like, he's like tall and handsome. Everyone's like, he's just so, you know, like tall and handsome and nice. And yeah, like he gets rightly dinged at the end for like taking that photo of Peter. But when he does it, he's not like, I'm going to get you, Parker. He's like, MJ deserves to know the truth. And you know what I mean? I just like, I like the teen movies where there are no like blonde guys named Blaine who are the bad guys. Do you know what I mean? Like that's the trend that I like. Everyone is just kind of like nice, but sometimes on different sides of things.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Similar to the way they, the direction they've taken Flash Thompson in.
Right.
Which is like, Flash is just like a narcissist rich kid.
Yeah.
Which I'm into. I'm into the balance of all of the friend group. I hope they all get to band together and help Spider-Man. I'm interested to see how
Spider-Man stay at home. Where he has to stay at home and everyone else has to go save the city.
Spider-Man, yeah. House arrest.
Spider-Man, house arrest.
Spider-Man, like home alone.
Oh!
Yeah. Oh. Okay.
It's better than Spider-Man, what? home on the range. So.
What about Spider-Man, home fries?
Ryan asked three spoilery questions.
Homesick.
How many other... home? What, homesick?
Yeah. No, but actually, I really like house arrest because, like, what if they do apprehend him because they think he's the villain in the third movie?
I like it's a title and it's a premise that I could get into, but then, like, sit down to write that movie and make it interesting.
No, I've seen that movie. It has...
It's called The Raid.
Robin Tunney and Tim Blake Nelson are in it, and it's called Cherish, and it's about a girl who's under house arrest, and it's actually pretty good. Anyway.
I'm talking about making a Spider-Man movie where supervillains are constantly attacking his home and the government's like, no, you can't leave. You're under house arrest.
I'd watch
right?
it.
That seems weird.
Be really okay. Set it at Christmas.
Just oh, only because Tom Holland does a good, come on, man.
Oh, like, guys. Yeah. Oh, guys.
Why are you making me stay in this house?
Just want to have a nice Christmas.
Yeah. Make it like...
I'm not even Spider-Man anymore. Oh, question. The scene in the trailer of him, like, in the Iron Spider suit beating up people at the restaurant, that wasn't in the movie, right? I didn't just blank that out in my mind.
No, that's not in the movie.
Okay, cool. Okay, Ryan's questions. Number one, how many other characters will we see duplicated or impersonated by Skrulls? Probably some, but I don't think we're moving towards an event yet, like a secret invasion. Like everyone's talking
about.
Yeah, and I
don't think you want to overuse it the way that we talked about the faceless man technology on Game of Thrones. Like, you don't want to watch a thing. God, it's going to be so annoying now because we're going to have Disney Plus shows. And people are going to be like, yeah, but what if so-and-so is a Skrull? Oh, I'm already angry at the internet for doing that.
Yeah, good. Lots of Skrulls. That was a great thing to introduce the Marvel Cinematic Universe. All right, second question for Brian. Will the rest of Mysterio's crew go to work for Osborn? I don't think there are any Osborn things in the movie that I saw, but the Avengers Tower is under construction, and of the Sony properties that are exclusively theirs that Marvel probably wouldn't want to touch, I guess is amongst them is Oscorp and the Green Goblin.
Oscorp.
So, Oscorp and the Green Goblin? It would be weird.
Okay, can I ask your favorite Easter egg in the film, because then I want to say my two favorite Easter eggs.
Yes.
I can start.
Yeah, you could start. Please do.
Number one is the initials on his suitcase, right? It's Uncle Ben's suitcase. I thought that was sweet.
Nice.
And then the other, which I've already like tweeted about and talked to you guys about, is on the jukebox in the bar scene, the song A Town Called Malice comes on, which is from the Billy Elliot soundtrack, and it's like a big sort of centerpiece song from that film, and Tom Holland played Billy Elliot on stage. I think it was like his first role ever or something like that. When he was a sprite, when he was a young kid, sprout actually is more what the word I wanted. So the Billy Elliot and the Uncle Ben, but like not a labored Uncle Ben shout out, just like a brief Uncle Ben shout out. Also, how do we feel about Happy and Aunt May? How do we feel about?
I love the way Fine. Aunt May treats it at the end, where she's just yeah. like, "Oh,
because,
I love Aunt May, obviously."
Because I feel like if Jon Favreau was like, "What if we do a show where we also tour Europe? Also, I'm fucking Marissa Tomei. Can we have those two things happen?" Cool, cool. I'll be
Jon
there.
Favreau's got a lot of pull over there at Marvel yeah. Studios.
At
still.
Disney, it's true.
He's like, I'm the director of The Lion King with Beyonce.
Yeah.
You will do as I command.
And I'm doing your Disney Plus show, motherfuckers. Your Mandalorian.
I will save Star Wars for the men.
I am not one of the creators of Game of Thrones. People like me still.
People have forgotten I was even in Solo. It's fine.
People have forgotten that Iron Man 2 was pretty bad.
Everyone still likes Swingers, even though it's pretty problematic if you rewatch it now. It's fine. This is fine.
Remember when I made that movie about becoming a chef and critics are the real evil in this world?
And in that movie, I got to have sex with Scarlett Johansson. Me too. It was great.
And it was just me working through my feelings about Iron Man 2.
All right. Is Jon Favreau's ego your favorite Easter egg? What is your favorite Easter egg from this?
I don't know if I had a favorite Easter egg. I was trying to look at my notes, and I definitely have that they actually use the name of Hydro Man, Morris Bench, for the fake news about the man that, like, I guess became the water elemental. It's really weird because they talk about it in the hostel, and like the name made me perk up because I'm like, ooh, Hydro Man. And I'm like, wait, I don't want it to be Hydro Man. Like, the elementals are cool. I get that the toy sets call them like Molten Man, Hydro Man, and Sand Man, but that those are characters I know. So it was interesting that they threw that out.
I loved that sort of hologram shot of them talking about the elementals and how we used to consider, you know, they're part of our mythology, but now they're real. And you see like Kali and like whatever. I thought that was a cool, even though it's all bullshit and holograms and drones. I still thought that was
Guterman.
Cool.
Guterman, the writer, did a pretty good job on,
I liked his whole team. I loved his whole team and how he kept like the costume lady, like all that stuff was really fun. I thought
my favorite thing is his like gray suit with the triangles and his fishbowl that he was using. I saw a photo of that. That was the first photo anybody like ever showed me. They're like, hey, Jake Gyllenhaal's Mysterio. Check it out. They're filming with him. And I, at some point on the Fighting in the War Room podcast, you could hear me hint at my future disgust from Far From Home, because I'm like, what's the point in not having a practical cape if you're going to put a fishbowl over his head? Like, I don't understand why you do one and not the other. Why is he in a motion capture suit? It is hilarious to me that I completely just misjudged the movie and he was actually walking around in a motion capture suit. And I like saw the end and was like, this isn't finished. This is bullshit.
That's their commentary about people making too much out of set photos.
Yeah,
they built this whole movie around it.
It's amazing how this movie was sold, because it had to have a trailer that didn't mention anything about Tony Stark at all. And then once it was able to mention Tony Stark, it still can't really talk about its entire back half of the movie. So it's good job, Marvel. I see why you have an entire Spider-Man fight scene in your trailer that didn't actually show up in the movie. I guess that's
well, you finally come around to that. I see that.
Yeah, just a full thing. Now I'm okay with it because I like the movie when it happens.
Neil, do you have a favorite Easter egg?
Other than Jon Favreau. Okay, I have a great Listen, I really like Jon Favreau in this movie. Now I feel bad because I talk shit about him. But when he picks up the old shield in the Crown Jewels room and throws it and is mad that it doesn't work like Captain America's shield, I laughed.
Yeah. That was really good. How does he do that? I think he said, or something like that.
How does Cap do that?
It was so funny when they showed the shot of Peter on the bridge and you see the Tower Bridge sign behind him, and I was like, why is that there sticking out like a sore thumb? Like, who put this rubble together? I don't like it. And I was like, oh, and then he used it as a shield. And I was
is this
like,
movie sponsored by the London Tourism Board? Yeah.
Oh, we needed to. Oh my god, also flash mob, great stuff. And like the use of the flash mob to like track them and stuff like that. And I actually really like the throwaway line when Happy says, oh, he said they're on the London Bridge, but I figured it out. It's actually the Tower Bridge. I figured it out. I was going to tell my European story. Okay, so my sister and I got off the train in Amsterdam, and we like just happened to hit a town when there was a huge soccer game between the Netherlands and Ireland. And so it was just like us, we got off the train, it was just a sea of people wearing orange. And I happened to have, like an orange beanie on, I think. And maybe, and actually I think I had an orange fleece vest. This is a time in my life when I was really into this one orange fleece vest I had. So I like turned around. There's a shot of me that my sister took of me like turning around with my thumbs up, like with like a sea of orange behind me. And it was just like, Netherlands. So when he like woke up in jail surrounded by like people in orange, I was like, Netherlands. And they're all like, and they're all so nice, which is true of the Netherlands. So yeah. There you go. That's my
accurate European Spider-Man Netherlands jokes.
I really loved that part when he asked to borrow that guy's phone. The guy's just like, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we're here.
I like the part right before that where the police chief or whatever is like bragging on the phone. It's like, yeah, the Night Monkey.
Night Monkey's pretty good.
Night Monkey's pretty good. All right, guys. Is there anything else we want to say about Spider-Man Far From Home before we take off? No. Yes, good. We like it. We like Spider-Man Far From Home.
We are pro Spider-Man Far From Home.
Pro Spider-Man Far From Home movie. Pro holiday weekend going to holiday if you live in the Americas.
Or if you're in Canada. Next week is Canada Day, too.
Okay, good. I said the Americas, but I was going to revise to just North America, so that's probably still accurate. All right. Guys, thank you so much. Till your next episode of The Storm, be it on or off season, where can people find more of you online? Let's start with Neil Miller.
Give me over at filmschoolrejects.com or on Twitter at rejects. Don't forget, follow the show and our fancy new spots at Storm Podcast on Twitter, stormpodcast.com. And don't forget, you can email us hosts, plural, at stormpodcast.com.
And Joanna Robinson.
You can find me on VanityFair.com. You can find me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This, and you can find me talking about Lost on the Storm Podcast, which you're listening to right now.
Perfect.
What?
Yes, stay subscribed.
What?
You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can find me on the Fighting in the War Room podcast and in our Slack. We will see you later. And until then, you gotta keep swinging and don't fall down. Trying to lose. Then you're left in the dust. Unless I stuck by